The reason she says the vine is in flower rather than with fruit is that even though the virtues in this life are enjoyed with all this perfection we have been discussing, she merely enjoys them as though in flower. Only in the next life will they be enjoyed as the fruit. And she adds, while we fashion a crown of roses, intricate as the pine, while the soul at this stage is enjoying the flower of this vineyard and delighting in the bosom of her beloved, it will happen that all her virtues are suddenly and clearly revealed in their perfection, and that they give her immense sweetness and delight. The soul feels that these virtues are both in her and in God, so that they seem to form a very flowering and pleasant vineyard, belonging to the bridegroom as well as to herself, and in which they both feed and delight. She then gathers all of these virtues and makes very delightful acts of love in each of them and in all together. She offers this bouquet to the beloved with the remarkable tenderness and sweetness of love. The beloved himself helps her, for without his favor and help, she would not be able to gather these virtues and offer them to him. Hence she says, while we fashion a cone of roses. She fashions this bouquet in the shape of a pine cone, for as a pine cone is something sturdy with many pieces or pine kernels firmly fastened together, so this cone or bouquet of virtues, which the soul arranges for her beloved, forms one perfect whole, embodying in itself many perfect and strong virtues, and very rich gifts. All perfections and virtues are incorporated in orderly fashion in the one solid perfection of the soul. This perfection, while being formed through the practice of the virtues, as well as when already formed, is offered by the soul to the beloved in that spirit of love we are discussing. These foxes should then be caught so that they do not hinder the interior communion of the two. The bride asks not only for the ability to make a good bouquet, but also for what follows in the next verse. And let no one appear on the hill. To attain this divine interior exercise, there is also need for solitude and withdrawal from all things presentable to the soul, whether from the lowest sensory portion or from the higher, the rational part. These two parts comprise the entire compound of man's faculties and senses, and she calls this compound a hill. All the natural knowledge and the appetites dwelling on the hill in this harmonious composite are like prey to the devil, who hunts and catches them in order to harm the soul. She says, and let no one appear on the hill, that is, let no image of any object belonging to any of these faculties or senses that we have mentioned appear before the soul and the bridegroom. This is like saying, let there be no particular knowledge or affection or other consideration in any of the spiritual faculties, memory, intellect, and will, and let there be no other digression, form, images or figures of objects or other natural operations in any of the bodily senses and faculties, either interior or exterior, the imaginative power and fantasy, sight and hearing. The reason the soul says this is that for the perfect enjoyment of this communion with God, all the senses and faculties, interior and exterior, should be unoccupied, idle, and empty of their own operations and objects. The more active they are in themselves at such a time, the more they hinder the communication. When the soul reaches a certain degree of interior union of love, the spiritual faculties are no longer active, and much less the corporeal ones, since the union of love is already wrought and the soul is actuated in love. Thus the faculties cease their work, since upon attaining the end, the activity of the means ceases. Then the soul attends to God with love, which is to love in the continuance of unitive love. And let no one appear on the hill, let only the will appear, attending to the beloved in a surrender of self and of all the virtues in the way described. Stanza 17, Introduction. For a greater understanding of the following stanza, it should be pointed out that the absence of the beloved, which the soul suffers in this state of spiritual espousal, are very painful. Some are of such a kind that there is no suffering comparable to them. The reason for such affliction is that since she has a singular intensive love for God in this state, his absence is a singular and intense torment for her. Added to this torment is the disturbance which at this time she receives from any kind of converse or communication with creatures. Since she lives with that driving force of a fathomless desire for union with God, any delay whatever is very burdensome and disturbing. Just as anything in the path of a stone which is racing on toward its center would cause in that void a violent jolt. Since the soul has already received the delight of these sweet visits, they are more desirable than gold and all beauty. Fearing as a result the great lack, even if momentary, of so precious a presence, she speaks in this stanza both to the dryness and to the spirit of her bridegroom. Be still, deadening north wind. South wind, come, you that waken love. Breathe through my garden, let its fragrance flow, and the beloved will feed amid the flowers. Commentary. Besides what was said in the previous stanza, spiritual dryness also hampers the interior satisfaction and sweetness of which she spoke. Dreading this, she does two things here. First, she impedes dryness by closing the door to it through continual prayer and devotion. Second, she invokes the Holy Spirit. He it is who will dispel this dryness and sustain and increase her love for the bridegroom. He also moves the soul to the interior exercise of the virtues, so that the Son of God, her bridegroom, may rejoice and delight more in his bride. She invokes the Holy Spirit because her entire aim is to please her bridegroom. Be still, deadening north wind. The north wind is very cold. It dries up and withers the flowers and plants, or at least when striking them makes them shrink and close. Because the spiritual dryness and effective absence of the beloved produces the same effect in the soul by extinguishing the satisfaction, delight, and fragrance of the virtues she was enjoying, she calls it a deadening north wind. It deadens the virtues and effective exercise, and as a result the soul pleads, "Be still, deadening north wind." It should be understood that this plea of the soul flows from prayer and the spiritual exercises and is directed toward a detainment of the dryness. Yet since God's communications to the soul are so interior that she cannot actively move her own faculties to the enjoyment of these communications, unless the spirit of the bridegroom causes this movement of love, she invokes him, saying, "South wind, come, you that waken love." The south wind is a delightful breeze. It causes rain, makes the herbs and plants germinate, opens the flowers, scatters their fragrance. Its effects are the opposite of those of the north wind. The soul, by this breeze, refers to the Holy Spirit, who awakens love. When this divine breeze strikes her, it wholly enkindles and refreshes her, and quickens and awakens the will, elevates the previously fallen appetites that were asleep to the love of God. It does so in such a way that she can easily add, "You that waken love," both his love and hers. What she asks of the Holy Spirit is expressed in the following verse, "Breathe through my garden." This garden is the soul. As the soul above calls herself a vineyard in flower, because the flower of the virtues within her supplies sweet-tasting wine. Here she calls herself a garden, because the flowers of perfections and virtues planted within her come to life and begin to grow. It should be noted that the bride does not say, "Breathe in my garden," but "Breathe through my garden," for there is a considerable difference between God's breathing in the soul and his breathing through the soul. To breathe in the soul is to infuse grace, gifts, and virtues. To breathe through the soul is to touch and put in motion the virtues and perfections already given, renewing and moving them in such a way that they of themselves afford the soul a wonderful fragrance and sweetness, as when you shake aromatic spices and they spread their abundant fragrance, which prior to this was neither so strong nor so highly perceptible. The soul is not always experiencing and enjoying the acquired or infused virtues actually, because, as we shall say later, they remain within her in this life like flowers enclosed in the bud, or like aromatic spices whose scent is not perceived until shaken and uncovered. God sometimes grants these favors to the soul, her bride, his bride. He breathes through her flowering garden, opens all the buds of virtue, and uncovers these aromatic spices of gifts, perfections, and riches. And disclosing this interior treasure and wealth, he reveals all her beauty. And then it is something wonderful to behold and pleasant to feel. The richness from her gifts unveiled to the soul and the beauty of these flowers of virtues now in full bloom. And the fragrant scent, each one with its own characteristics gives to her, is inestimable.